you want to turn to Exodus chapter 3, please. So today we're going to continue to talk about spiritual leadership. I'm going to look at some of the life and trials of Moses for some examples of what we need leadership from and for. And, you know, the question begs itself, so what do we need leadership from? Pretty much everything, right? Of course. Keep in mind, as always, as we look at this, even if these things don't apply directly to you, you know, part of our service to others is to be there for other people as they're going through things. So it's very important for Christians to familiarize themselves with different things that are going on with, you know, the world, the culture, and pretty much everything. This way we're ready to stand against that stuff when necessary. So let's, before we start in Exodus, let's just very quick review some of the points that we made last week. Is there a good framework and context for some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today? So last week we said all Christians are leaders in some way, in some capacity. At some point, you're going to find yourself in a leadership position, whether it be for a short period of time or at work, whatever. All Christians are leaders. Leaders must be grounded in humility. I mean, over and over we saw that concept and that principle of, you know, Jesus' own words, you know, those who are humble will be exalted, and those who exalt themselves will be humbled. Leaders tell the truth. Leaders tell the truth. Are you serving God as a reflection of Christ to a lost and dying world with humble obedience based on what he's done for us, or are you just kind of dabbling and doing your best to get by? Leaders also walk the walk. We talked about the Pharisees last week, and they're just, you know, probably like the perfect example of hypocrisy and leadership. It's very, very easy to pick out all the stuff that they were trying to push and see the exact opposite of how we're supposed to lead. And leaders listen to sound leadership. Leaders listen to sound leadership. I mean, Proverbs, I love Proverbs. It's just filled with stuff like this. It's how we are supposed to treat our leaders, how we're supposed to respond to them, very, very important. So keeping all this in mind, we're going to take a flyover view of some of the incidents that Moses dealt with in his time as a leader of the exiles. So, you know, obviously some of this stuff is not going to apply directly to us, but again, still important. Still important for the context of, you know, the principles that we can apply to our own lives. Remember as we go along that constant context of what do we need leadership from. Keep that in the back of your mind and in your thinking as we kind of go through this. So Exodus chapter 3, let's start in verse 9. We're going to do some reading, bouncing around a little bit. I didn't want to go through every situation scenario, but I picked out a bunch that I think will be helpful. So Exodus 3, we're going to start in verse 9. We're going to read through verse 14. Now behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, certainly I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you that it is I who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. Then Moses said to God, behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. Now they may say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Right after this, God assures Moses that the elders of Israel will listen to him, specifically in verse 18. But in chapter 4, verse 1, Moses asked, what if they won't believe me? Or what if they won't listen to what I say? God then gives Moses the ability to perform specific signs, such as the staff turning into a snake, the leprous hand being able to come down with leprosy and then immediately be healed, and water from the Nile being poured out on the ground and turned into blood. But even still, in verse 10 of chapter 4, Moses said to the Lord, "Lord, please, I've never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." And let's look at verses 11 to 13 to see the response. Chapter 4, 11 to 13. The Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth, or who makes him mute, or deaf, or seeing, or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now then, go, and I, even I, will be your mouth, and teach you what you are to say." But he said, "Please, Lord, now send the message by whomever you will." Let's pause right there and talk about the first area where, you know, people need leadership from. And this is broken countless individuals throughout time, a seemingly insurmountable giant that so many struggle with day in and day out. And obviously they've struggled with it since the time of Moses, because we see Moses struggling with it himself. This is a battlefield that rages day after day in the lives of many people, probably everyone to some degree. And this battle is fought right here, right in between your ears, right in the mind. The fear of failure, fear of inadequacy, feelings of low or no self-worth, just a snare to people, crippled believers and unbelievers alike. So a couple thoughts on this. First off, when someone is going through or dealing with this kind of, I guess you could say, poor mental attitude, it's very easy to blurt out a lot of answers, and the answers are good. But, you know, it's very easy to say, you know, God loves you so much, he sent his son to die for you. God didn't make mistakes when he made you. You know, you're beautifully and wonderfully made. And yes, all those things are absolutely true. And they can be helpful, but, you know, sometimes people don't really, it's not so much that they need education. Sometimes they just need empathy or sympathy or somebody to just be there with them. I like to watch a lot of Frank Turek, and sometimes he's an evangelist, if you don't know, and he goes and does events all over, and he just opens it up for questions, and sometimes people ask him, like, really, really tough, deep, personal questions, and, you know, you can tell that they're struggling with these things, and a lot of times his response is, well, you know, I can give you the answers, but you need a pastor, like, you need somebody to sit down with you and be with you, not so much the academic answers. Anyway, so Jesus can sympathize with our weakness, and I think it's very important for us Christians to try and keep that in mind. And, you know, this is just a personal opinion. You might have a different one, but for me, I think this is becoming a bigger and bigger problem in our society. And of course, you know, the easy scapegoat is, you know, point to social media. Everybody's lives are on display, and of course, they only put the best parts of their life on social media. Nobody's going to put that their car got repoed and, you know, the kids are being bad. That stuff's not going on social media, right? Only good stuff. You know, God gave Moses Aaron to speak for him. God immediately kind of gave him, you know, a way out. So, and another thing about this, too, and I'm not really big on saying, well, this is a demonic attack, or this is, you know, Satan, or, you know, I kind of leave that stuff to the side. But I definitely think that this kind of breaking down of people's mental stability, their, you know, whatever you want to call it, depression, you know, is, I think it's a bigger and bigger strategy of the enemy, and it's just becoming a greater and greater problem in my mind, but especially for young men. Especially for young men. You know, if you have dealings with 20-something-year-olds right now, a lot of them are just very, very hopeless. How am I ever going to afford a house? How am I, you know, all this political turmoil that we're going through. You're going to make six figures. You're going to be 6 feet tall. All that type of stuff. You're going to have a car. You're going to have a nice house and a family. Like, this stuff is kind of hard to achieve when you're in your 20s, especially with everything that's going on in the world. And it's one of those things that just kind of wears on young people. And, you know, I've heard many young people say, like, I just feel hopeless. So, anyway. So if you're brought low by these types of feelings, you just want to escape them. And unfortunately, a lot of people will do that by turning to the wrong things, whether it's drugs or alcohol or whatever, just to try and escape those feelings. And obviously, you know, those aren't the answers. And that's certainly something that we can, you know, offer to anyone that is going through these type of things. Like, this is not the answer. A temporary fix, if you even want to call it that, a temporary fix is not going to solve the root issue. So you got to deal with that first. So how can we help them? Well, of course, you know, it's a good idea to remind people what is true and what does Scripture say about their individuality and their worth in God's eyes. Obviously, God died for them, for us, for me, for you, for each of us collectively and as individuals. But then, you know, you just got to be there for people. Sometimes it's just being there. You don't even have to say anything. You just got to be there for people. And the darkness of what the people are going through, it's like a cloud that just shrouds them. And of course, God can use others to clear that fog so they can get back to letting their own light shine. But it's a tough thing to go through. It's a real battle that many, many people struggle with. And, you know, as far as men go, a lot of times, what do we do, right? We kind of keep things to ourselves, we internalize things, and hopefully it doesn't spill over, boil over, but, you know, it's just something that we, at least me, something that a lot of men do. So some quick answers here. Romans 12:15, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Galatians 6:2, bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. Just be there for people. Be there for people. Just come to my mind right now. What was it, the fourth, Job's fourth friend that was just kind of there and kind of kept quiet for a little while and was just there for them? I don't know. So what does this look like for you in each situation? Who knows? Who knows? God doesn't give us specific answers for every little thing we're going through. But continuing to apply wisdom and, you know, again, empathizing, being there for people is very important. Back to Moses. Something important to keep in mind, and this comes from a commentary that I read as I was putting this together. So Moses made a lot of excuses, right? Made a lot of excuses and why he felt inadequate for the job. And it was natural for him to feel that way. So at the end of the day, we are actually inadequate. We are all not worthy of, you know, doing the things that God has set us forward to do. But what we need to remember is he is going to give us what we need to accomplish what he has for us. Moses was inadequate. But just as God told Moses in verse 12 of chapter 3, I will be with you. God wasn't asking Moses to figure this all out on his own. When God calls us to tasks, especially those that seem too difficult, he doesn't put us out in the front lines alone. He's not going to put us in situations where he hasn't supplied what we need to be successful in what he's given us to do. We can control, what can we control? We can control our attitude, our availability, and our willingness to be used by God. So don't let the fears of inadequacy keep you from doing the work that God has called you to do. And, you know, don't take away the blessing. This is a big point that it just keeps coming up over and over in all the little random encounters in life. Don't take away the blessings that you could potentially give to other people and the blessings that other people could potentially give you back once you're fulfilling the purpose God has for you and whatever that may be. So remember, remind others that are struggling, you know, God isn't finished with them. They have unique gifts and talents, and, you know, sometimes people can forget that, and it's not so much that they're forgetting it from an academic standpoint. Again, it's just that the shroud of darkness, and, you know, it's really tough for people to escape that. So God uses others to kind of pick people up. So when people feel alone, remind them that they're never alone. They're never alone. Sorry, lots of rabbit trails with that one. So let's skip ahead. We're going to skip past Moses' dealings with Pharaoh. But one thing I found a little bit interesting as we kind of jump past that is Moses, for someone who was so, like, mealy-mouthed and why me, are you sure, are you sure, he really got kind of bold as his interactions with Pharaoh kind of proceeded. So I thought that was, you know, kind of neat. God says, go and tell them this, and they do, Moses and Aaron, they just do it. There's not really a lot of hesitation there, at least not from what we're told. Let's skip ahead to Exodus 15. Exodus 15, we're going to start in verse 22, and we're going to read to verse 26. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out in the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore it was named Marah. So the people grumbled at Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Then he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. There he made for them a statute and regulation, and there he tested them. And he said, "If you will give earnest heed to the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians, for I, the Lord, am your healer." Let's skip down to chapter 16, verse 2 to 7. Let's see a little bit more about this. 16, verse 2. The whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The sons of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether or not they will walk in my instruction. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily." So Moses and Aaron said to all the sons of Israel, "At evening you will know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. In the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your grumblings against the Lord. And what are we that you grumble against us?" The complaints of the Israelites in the wilderness. It's going to be a constant issue. I love using this, the complaints of Israel, when my children start complaining about random stuff. Like, "Oh, you know what we're going to read tonight." But in this first situation, we see the solution, right? Before Moses could react impatiently, as he kind of has a tendency to do in some scenarios, instead God solved the problem right away for him. All Moses had to do was to declare to the people that you're not really complaining against us, you're complaining against God. And of course, this is, again, a fairly unique situation. I don't think any of us are going to be faced with a wilderness journey. But what's important to take out of this is a couple things. Reliance on God, and we need to be humble and content with where we are and what we have. Philippians 4:11-12, "Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need." Well, we know it's not going to end there, right? In chapter 17, the grumbling continued. And what Moses, you know, perhaps starting to get a little frustrated, he asks in verse 4, what shall I do with this people? A little more and they'll stone me to death. It says Moses cried out to the Lord. Frustrated or not, the reliance on God is a constant solution that leaders need to employ. Later on in chapter 17, the nation of Israel fought against Amalek. And this is when Aaron and Hur had to, you know, raise Moses' arms, and when he started to get weak, his arms would fall. The Amalekites would start to win once his arms were down. Once they prop his arms up, the Israelites would start to win. You know, just knowing that the Israelites could stand, this is a, you know, the Amalekites were a warlike tribe who killed for prosperity and profit. So just the fact that this nation of exiles could stand against them is pretty cool in itself. And it should show them that God is with them and that he'll fight their battles for them. Chapter 18, Moses encounters another problem And this was one I don't think he even realized was an issue, but it's something kind of unique, and I think it'd be good for us to look at it. So we're going to skip down to Exodus 18, verses 13 to 21. 13 to 21. It came about the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood about Moses from the morning until evening. Now when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this thing that you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, and all the people stand about you from morning until evening?" Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, it comes to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor and make known the statutes of God and his laws." Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing you are doing is not good. You will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. Now listen to me. I'll give you counsel, and God be with you. You be the people's representative before God, and you bring the disputes to God. Then teach them the statutes and laws, and make known to them the way in which they are to walk and the work they are to do. Furthermore, you shall select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain, and you shall place these over them as leaders of thousands or hundreds of fifties and tens." And then it says, let these people judge the situation. So basically, Moses is doing too much, right? He is in danger of suffering burnout. And whether or not he realized it, what he did in the situation shows good leadership. So remember earlier, last week, we said leaders listen to good counsel. Well, Jethro gave him some good counsel here, and it's interesting as you read through these verses. A lot of what he says applies directly to, these qualities apply directly to leaders in the current church. Men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain. So if you go back to 1 Timothy, a lot of these things come right back up again. So Moses listened to his father-in-law and did what he said. And this whole idea of delegating tasks is something that leaders need to learn to do, because eventually you're going to burn out, or you won't be able to be in multiple places at once, or physically you just can't do the things that you used to do. So personal story about this 100% being the case. So I remember when I first took over as the camp director for the YMCAs, it's very small amount of context. The person before me wasn't doing a great job, so I had to come in and kind of fix everything. So that, I have a tendency to want to do everything myself anyway, but that certainly didn't help, because now I'm like, all right, it has to be this way, it has to be this. And I was doing way too much, not relying on, the staff that I had, all that stuff. But we have to remember, too, other people have gifts and other people have talents, and if you're trying to do everything yourself, you're kind of like holding those other people back in terms of, what they're able to give to the group. So in this case, since I was doing everything, all my counselors, they weren't really interacting with the kids, and it basically all fell on my shoulders. So what I should have done is like, all right, you go do this with them, and this way some of them could have their talents and their unique gifts shared throughout the whole camp. Anyway. Just like I said, personal thing where I was like, oh yeah, I remember that happened with summer camp. Couple more scenarios for Moses. We're going to turn all the way to Numbers chapter 11. Numbers chapter 11, we're going to start at verse 11, and I think we're going to see Moses start to crack a little bit here. Numbers 11, we're going to read through verse 15. So Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you been so hard on your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight that you would have laid the burden of all this people on me? Was it I who conceived all this people? Was it I who brought them forth that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing infant to the land which you swore to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give all this people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I alone am not able to carry all this people, because it is too burdensome for me. So if you are going to deal thus with me, please kill me at once, if I have found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness. Wow. So Moses is getting kind of frustrated here, huh? Jump down to 20, verse 21. But Moses said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 on foot. Yet you have said, I will give them meat so that they may eat for a whole month. Should flocks and herds be slaughtered for them to be sufficient for them? Or should all the fish of the sea gather together for them to be sufficient for them? The Lord said to Moses, is the Lord's power limited? Now you shall see whether my word will come true for you or not. Again, you know, this is a constant issue with the Israelites, right? They're constantly complaining. They're constantly, you know, pretty upset about their situation. Obviously, traveling in the wilderness is probably not easy, but you know, they have the pillar of cloud, the pillar of fire. They have all these. They saw the exodus out of Egypt. You would think that they would stop complaining and stop grumbling. However, it just doesn't seem to happen. I think if we're being honest with ourselves, we can certainly see ourselves doing some of the same things that Moses was starting to do here, starting to crack, starting to get real frustrated. But what's important is to take out of this is to remind ourselves that God's power does not diminish over time. The resources and power are continuously available to us, even if things go wrong. Even if the day-to-day life of people is droning on, and, you know, I don't know, maybe it's harder to keep God in mind as everyday life just kind of goes and goes and goes. I don't know, maybe it's harder, but just as usual, is God's power limited? No, of course not. Of course not. What if it's a really, really bad situation? Is God's power limited? No, of course not. Continual reliance and perseverance with trust in God is extremely important for any leader, or any Christian for that matter. We're going to see, though, the punches just keep rolling for Moses. In chapter 12, we see Miriam and Aaron, his own family turning against him. So let's quick read that. So, chapter 12, verses 1 to 3. This is right after the whole quail. Now the quail come, so they have meat. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke to Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. Pretty interesting that it says that right there. Moses was humble. Jump down to verse 9. So the anger of the Lord burned against them, and he departed. Excuse me. But when the cloud had withdrawn from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous, as white as snow. As Aaron turned toward Miriam, behold, she was leprous. Then Aaron said to Moses, O my Lord, I beg you, do not account this sin to us, in which we have acted foolishly, and in which we have sinned. Oh, do not let her be like one dead whose flesh is half eaten away when he comes from his mother's womb. Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, O God, heal her, I pray. Even after being turned on by his family, Moses still had the humility and forgiveness to cry out for his sister. Well, this situation here, Moses really didn't have to do much because there was, you know, God almost immediately intervened. But Moses' reaction was still one of sound leadership, one of care for his family, a continual reliance on God in difficult situations. Chapter 16, we see another rebellion, this time not from family members, but a group of leaders led by Korah. So let's quick jump over there and read a couple verses. Chapter 16, verse 2. Read through verse 5. And they rose up before Moses, together with some of the sons of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, chosen in assembly, men of renown. They assembled together against Moses and Aaron, and said to them, you have gone far enough, for all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. So why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly? When Moses heard this, he fell on his face. And he spoke to Korah and all his company, saying, tomorrow morning the Lord will show you who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to himself. Even one whom he will choose, he will bring near to himself. So obviously, Moses, in his humility, doesn't lash out, doesn't freak out, doesn't yell. He just says, God's gonna show us who are really his. And these guys, instead, you kind of see the opposite, only they're accusing Moses of doing what they're doing. So instead of being humble themselves, they accuse Moses of exalting himself, Moses and Aaron, of exalting themselves above everyone else. In the conclusion of this, later on in the chapter, we have Moses saying, hey, if I'm God's chosen person, the ground is going to open up and swallow you guys whole. And then, again, almost immediately, that's exactly what happens in verse 31. As he finished speaking, the ground just opened up and swallowed them and their households and all the men that belonged to Korah. Even before this, interestingly enough, Moses once again had to pray to God to not completely wipe out the congregation. Moses, again, cared enough about them where he says, God, don't wipe them all out. Just, you know, maybe we can deal with these guys. Pretty tough to do, but a tall task for a leader to be continuously humble and to continuously care for people, despite the fact that they're just complaining and grumbling and you know, seemingly being terrible. So let's pick out one more scenario with Moses to look at. So turn to Numbers 27. Numbers 27. We're going to read 15 to 23. Then Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, may the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who will go out and come in before them, and who will lead them out and bring them in, so that the congregation of the Lord will not be like sheep which have no shepherd. So the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, the son of Nun, a man who is in the spirit, and lay your hands on him, and have him stand before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and commission him in their sight. You shall put some of your authority on him, in order that all the congregation of the sons of Israel may obey him. Moreover, he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before the Lord. At his command they shall go out, and at his command they shall come in, both he and the sons of Israel with him, even all the congregation. So Moses did just as the Lord commanded him, and he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation. Then he laid hands on him, commissioned him, just as the Lord had spoken through Moses. So despite years of trial, constant complaining, rebelling, and just the Israelites just not listening in general, Moses still cared so much about this nation that he wanted God to appoint a strong leader after his time was up. And verse 17, he asked God for a leader who will go out and come in before them, who will lead in such a way where they're not sheep without a shepherd. So again, not only did Moses humbly turn to God before this decision was made, he didn't just go out and pick a leader himself, but he followed God's instructions. He also did what leaders should do in a situation specific to this, and where he put himself as the leader and Joshua as the successor in front of all the congregation, as it says in verse 22. This way the people would know that with absolute certainty that this was the man that Moses and by extension God had chosen to lead them. This protected Joshua as their new leader. You know, Joshua wasn't going to have to deal with, well, who says you should be leader? Obviously, the people should know by everything that we saw, Moses and God appointing him, that he is their leader. So Moses certainly had his hands full with as the leader of the Israelites. Problem after huge problem is what he faced. The exodus from Egypt to the wanderings in the wilderness right up until entry into the promised land. It was just issue after issue. Moses' leadership exemplifies the challenges and responsibilities that go along with godly leadership. Situation after situation, Moses had to have a reliance on God for strength and wisdom. Although he had his own failings, Moses was a model of faithfulness and perseverance in the face of overwhelming situations. It's a pretty wild journey for somebody who told God right off the start, like, are you sure? Are you sure you want me to do this? Like, I'm not really good at this. But yes, God was sure. One more quick area to touch on before we close. We need leaders to lead in the face of tragedies. So obviously what happened with the accident, you know, with Ed and Kathy, it's tough, and it's a tragedy. We have said so many times as Christians, we're not guaranteed to have an easy life. In fact, it's quite the opposite. We will have tragedies. We will have things go wrong. How is our faith when things like that happen? When faced with the tragedy, leaders need to be there for others, take care of them, and step up to fill the gaps where necessary. All the while, we need to be relying on and leaning on God for comfort and strength. We do not have a God who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. He gives us what we need to deal with whatever comes before us. In 1 Corinthians 10:1-13, I'll just read it for you guys. For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea and all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. And all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. Now these things happened as examples for us. These things happened as examples for us, so that we will not crave evil things as they also craved. Do not be idolaters, as some of the people were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play, nor let us act immorally as some of them did. 23,000 fell in one day. Nor let us try the Lord as some of them did and were destroyed by the serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall. No temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man, and God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, that you will be able to endure it. So we have a God who is always with us. He always wants what's best for us, and he orchestrates things in such a way where even in the most difficult of circumstances or deepest of tragedies, we know he is faithful. I've seen a lot of, I guess I'll just call out Jody, because she was really like, I remember me being in the hospital maybe the first or second time, and then to see how she reacted to the whole situation was like, wow, okay, cool. Like, if Jody's feeling this way, I know I can kind of get over it a little bit. So one final verse to wrap this up a little bit. Is, and I know Ed in his last class, and then Tom and Brad also said this, James 1:2, consider it joy when nothing goes wrong in life and everything is worked out perfectly, right? No, that's not, I'm going from memory, so consider it joy sometimes when there's trials and things eventually work out for good, right? No, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. One more quick story for you guys. And after last week, I had talked to Rory just to say, hey, he wanted to know, hey, did everything go good? How was it received? And as we were talking, I reminded him, or you know, brought up. So after, when I was going through my big tragedy, and you guys probably can figure out what it was, it was really, really tough, and I was in despair like for a long time, and you know, constant phone calls to friends and Ed, but I remember there was one time, and I don't even know him that well at this point, like really at all, But I called Rory because he had gone through what I was going through in the past, and he was helpful from day one. But there was one particular night I called him at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and of course he answers the phone, talks to me for a little bit, calms me down, gets me back to bed basically. And I reminded him of that, and he just laughed. He's like, "Yep, that's what we do. That's what we do." And I just thought that was the perfect response. Like, that's what we do for each other as Christians, as leaders. That's what we do. So he said, he gave me permission to tell you guys the story, even though it's embarrassing for me. That's all I have for us today. So let's try to keep all those things in mind as leaders and as we go forward in our walks. All right? Let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much again for the ability to come together and fellowship with one another, hear your word, and be trained up in your word. Pray that you continue to use us as leaders in whatever situation you have for us. Give us what we need, empower us with what we need, and help us to be sensitive to those opportunities. Always ready to make a defense, always ready to be there for others. We pray this all in Jesus' name.